bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by FanDuel Sportsbook. I'm your host, Todd Furman, joined, as always, by my esteemed colleague and co-host, the one, the only, Payne Insider. And just in time for the holiday season, we know all of you guys are sitting at home watching bowl games. You're going to be betting the NFL this weekend. It's the perfect time to sign up for a FanDuel account. Use the promo code BETTHEBOARD. Take advantage of your risk-free bet, your enhanced odds, everything that you'd want from adding another sportsbook to your already potent arsenal. And Payne, it is the final Bet the Board podcast for 2022. It's amazing what happens and the fun you can have. Time flies
for what
in
year?
This business.
What year?
Oh, sorry, 2021. I'm jumping the gun here. My apologies. Jumping the gun.
You are. It means it's 11:30 a.m. We got a late jump on the podcast, and there's college football on in the background of your office.
Well, of course there's college football on in the background of my office, but that has nothing to do with me not remembering what year it was. I mean, we had a stimulating discussion, you know, about where we wanted to go with some of these games. You know, we had a nice chat with John on and off the air. Of course, folks will get to hear that interview later in the show, and we talk about, you know, some of the options that he's seen come across the counter. But, you know, without much further ado, let's get into some of the big games. Or do you have anything else you'd like to share? Any shots you'd like to take? Any wisdom you'd like to impart? I'm not quite sure.
No, I think what's interesting here is we spoke to John for about an hour off air. I think people would be interested in conversations like that. Maybe it's a podcast, although we have to be a little bit more reserved, I think. But yes, let's dive into it. I think this is going to be a little bit quicker just based upon, you know, everything still kind of going on, and it's kind of a bleak board overall. I know that doesn't sell it very well, but yes, let's get it rolling.
All right, let's do it. And we'll start in rotation order, not chronological order, as the NFL has moved some of these games around to showcase bigger matchups. It may not be one bigger on the Sunday slate than what we're going to see in Dallas, where the Arizona Cardinals go on the road to take on the Cowboys. You're looking at the Cowboys, a 5.5-point home favorite. Total in this game has been bet up from the open. We're now looking at a 51 at FanDuel and Sportsbook. And when you look at Cliff Kingsbury, Payne, since taking over the Cardinals, he's 15-5-1 through week 7. He's 8-18 when the pressure gets to be a little bit more, and the Cardinals somehow found a way to back into the postseason despite not being able to win a clinching game for, I think, they're 0-5 now in those spots. When you look at Arizona, though, they have thrived as an underdog this season, 5-0 straight up and 5-0 against the spread when catching points. Dallas, however, one of the best teams where it matters most at the betting window. And I think, Payne, for this game, it's trying to figure out if Arizona's offense can get right against the Dallas defense that looks as dynamic as any in the National Football League right now.
I think that's probably the big question. And yeah, it's kind of concerning when you just kind of look at what's transpired here down the stretch for Arizona. And, you know, you try to remove the fact that the Colts ended up having like the entirety of their interior offensive line out last week against Arizona. Yeah, I mean, it was like, what was it? Kelly, Nelson, and Glowinski were all out. But I think prior to that news, even there was like this real debate about the market potentially overreacting too much to Arizona's recent struggles. There was kind of like this sense that Arizona pick them at home against 7-6 Indy was the absolute floor of their market. And then Arizona still lost in what many thought was like the perfect spot. And so that, I think, is kind of the question this week in general, because right, obviously, like, Dallas looked unstoppable in primetime against Washington. And we've had this 3-point adjustment from the look ahead, right? It was Dallas minus 2.5. It's now Dallas minus 5.5, shot right through the 3 and the 4. You mentioned Arizona, right? They've certainly performed better on the road. Dallas, though, has performed substantially better at home, and obviously there's some revenge from a season ago for the Cowboys. So it's really interesting. I think this basically becomes just this. If you're entering this market, you're kind of just, it's about price. And that's kind of why I'm struggling with this game, right? These late season moves this large make me nervous, because it's clear that Arizona and Dallas are kind of heading in different directions. But if we're incorporating full season priors, like, the line looks kind of nutty. But if we're assessing these teams in their current form and using weighted metrics, the line makes all the sense in the world. Like, what is Arizona right now, right? It's a below average defense. It's a below average coach. And it's a struggling offense without its best weapon. And when you put it in that context, the price seems somewhat fair. And I think you hit this perfectly. Like, these late season collapses aren't anything new for Cliff Kingsbury's, right? It's like, whether it's college football, whether it's the NFL, the late season collapses happen virtually every single year. And you start to think it's the offense, right? Because his teams are offense focused, whether it's teams catching on to the spread. And we've talked about this, right? It doesn't have a ton of wrinkles. There isn't a lot of, like, change. There aren't a lot of, like, plays that lead to another in this offense. I know a lot of Arizona fans, when they were rolling hot, called us idiots because of this. But, you know, very, very silent the last month. And so I don't know if there's something internal going on, or if there's something that Kingsbury doesn't do day to day. Whatever it is, it's pretty ugly. And you mentioned that, right? 15-5-1 from week 8 onwards with the Arizona Cardinals the last three seasons. You go back to, like, the Texas Tech days, and then you combine it with what's gone on with the Arizona Cardinals. Kingsbury's 42-20 games 1-7, 16-43 from game 8 onwards the last 9 seasons. So there's something clearly here. 2 months ago, right, like, when Arizona's winning all these games with Colt McCoy and holding down the fort, we all thought, like, hey, you know, wait until Kyler comes back. They're going to make this run. Kyler's been terrible. Last 4 games, he's 24th in EPA plus completion percentage above expectation. And it's against defenses with an average efficiency rank of 17th, so below average. And now you get the hottest defense in the league with Dallas, number 1 in weighted defensive efficiency. You look at the Cowboys since week 8, number 1 success rate allowed. Only 37% of snaps have graded successful. Dan Quinn has been fantastic. It's why he's getting a lot of pub for potentially being a head coach next year. My understanding, though, and he's, like, fully entrenched, right, with what's going on with Dallas this season, because he turned down the Jacksonville interview.
Which is, so it's really maybe interesting. A smart move.
Yeah, it could be the smart move, yeah. The other interesting thing here is, like, the pressure being generated in recent weeks for Dallas, like, is absolutely, like, off the charts. Since DeMarcus Lawrence returned in week 13, Dallas has pressured quarterbacks on 39% of dropbacks. So, good thing, right? Kyler, all signs point to him getting Rodney Hudson back, the Cardinals all-world center. That is huge. Obviously, massive snap kerfluffle last week that led to a safety. There are a couple things
good
in this
use,
matchup.
Good use, by the way, of kerfluffle. Good use out of you.
There we go. North Carolina, a quick 3-and-out.
Are you going to give us play-by-play on this bowl game so people know exactly how late we're running this morning?
We're just going to give a little play-by-play here in college football on the NFL podcast. So, you know, looking at this matchup, right, there's a couple of things I think that have to give here, right? When you look at Arizona, they've still done a very good job winning the money down. Cardinals are number 1 in third and fourth down efficiency. But Dallas, number 1 in the NFL, and third down conversion rate allowed, about 9% better than league average. So something's got to give there. I just don't think, with the pressure Dallas is getting right now, that if you're sitting in 3rd and 5+, that's going to be overly advantageous, even if you have Kyler. Part of the offensive decline Arizona's had during this recent struggle is because of the red zone production. They were number 1 in the NFL the first 7 games. They've converted 69% of red zone trips into touchdowns. They're down to 53% since then. And it makes some sense, right? Like, you lose your big body jump ball guy in Hopkins, and then James Conner, who you signed to give you that physical presence when space condense to kind of help negate the issues that spread offenses typically have in the red zone, he's out. And Conner missed the Colts game. If you listen to the postgame presser, it didn't even sound like Conner was close to playing with his heel injury. It's just a tough game because everything points to Dallas, right, matchup-wise, current form-wise. But it does feel like Arizona's backs are against the wall here, right? They're being called frauds, and, you know, they've been great on the road, as you alluded to. What was it, 5-0 against the spread and straight up? Candidly, I don't really have any interest in this game. It feels super high variance as we're recording this now, though, like Dallas out to six. So you do wonder when things start to stop here in terms of this price increase.
Yeah, interesting that that's not the only game moving right now out to six. There's another game that's of some interest moving as well. So you wonder what kind of coordination taking place in the market at this current juncture. And just kind of building on the case you made there, talking about the Arizona Cardinals and some of their struggles, a quote from Cliff Kingsbury about Rodney Hudson: he's a security blanket for all of us, the coaching staff, O-line, skill position players. He's really the glue that's made it all stick together. It's a big deal to get him back. So it's always difficult to try and quantify the return of a player that even the coaching staff realizes his overall impact. And as far as Kyler Murray is concerned, you look at weeks 1 through 13 versus the last 3 weeks. His numbers, 8.9 yards per attempt, have dropped to 6.7. Takes him from first in the league to 15th. A 7% touchdown to attempt ratio falls to 1.5%. That takes him from first in the league to 27th. And his passer rating from 112 down to 77. That takes him from first in that category down to 26. So there's no doubt about it, when you look at some of those numbers and see how things play out, that there's definitely noise there, and a Cardinals team who, as you said, backs against the wall, going to need to put together their best performance. On to a game that'll go a long way, Payne, in defining the AFC: the Kansas City Chiefs and the Cincinnati Bengals. We're looking at Kansas City, a 5.5-point road favorite as they'll head to the jungle. Total in this game sits at 50 at FanDuel Sportsbook. Kansas City, they clinched their sixth straight division crown, now trying to secure the number one overall seed in the AFC. And when you look at the Chiefs, the stories of their demise offensively, probably premature. They're averaging more than 39 points per game over their last three games. Mark their 19th 35-plus point performance last week over the last four seasons. And you saw, maybe more importantly, the emergence of a potential third option in this passing attack if Byron Pringle can be that guy opposite Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill, matched up against a Cincinnati defense that showed plenty of vulnerabilities even last week against Josh Johnson, who was scraped up off the scrap heap.
Yeah, I think, you know, Pringle's kind of a guy that we've talked about being very smart enough to kind of be that third guy. He doesn't have all the talent in the world. If you could put his smarts and route running with Robinson's body, you'd have a really elite receiver, but he's certainly dependable. The Chiefs offense kind of trending back the right way, 118 points the last three games. Obviously, you know, when you look at those three defenses they played, they're 22nd or worst in defensive efficiency. So I think we're still kind of hesitant to think the Chiefs offense is fully nuclear again. Now, still a very good offense, but, you know, we'll see what comes of that. Cincinnati, despite some of the question marks that I think we all have, this would be the best defense Kansas City's played since week 11. Again, not really saying all that much. My sense is the Bengals defense, when I look at it, is like average, maybe slightly above average. It's kind of what my eyes tell me, and then I'm able to confirm that with the numbers, and it kind of meshes perfectly with both efficiency and EPA numbers. But I think it's hard to ignore some of the quarterbacks that have had success against the Bengals the back half of the season, right? I mean, Mike White, Baker Mayfield, Jimmy G, Josh Johnson. On average, those four quarterbacks finished seventh in EPA plus completion percentage above expectation the week they played the Bengals. I also think there's pretty, you know, coaching mismatch here. I think
you don't say there's a coaching mismatch between Andy Reid and Zach Taylor.
I think there's probably a matchup mismatch here as well. I mean, last week we kind of focused on Mark Andrews and we said he'd have a field day. He did. Travis Kelce is a go this week. Cincinnati allowing nearly 12 yards per catch to tight ends this season, 7 touchdowns. The Bengals are bottom 5 in the NFL in both counting stats and efficiency defending tight ends. Now, Logan Wilson returned to practice in full on Wednesday. That is a good sign, although Zach Taylor didn't sound overly confident he'd play. Jermaine Pratt got popped with COVID Wednesday. He is a key cog in the middle of the defense as well. If Wilson returns, maybe we see an uptick in the Bengals' ability to cover tight ends, but he's got a below-average coverage grade. There actually isn't a linebacker on the Bengals' roster with an above-average coverage grade. The Bengals also stink defending running back passes, so something to look for there. Over 100 receptions allowed to running backs. Again, bottom 5 in the league in both counting stats and efficiency defending running back passes. We know Andy Reid, kind of the king of the screen game. So if CEH is out, I would expect Daryl Williams receiving props to be quite intriguing and garner some attention from pro bettors.
It makes a ton of sense in that regard. And to your point on the Logan Wilson situation, it's amazing that you get a head coach to say he's extremely doubtful. We don't see any scenario where he could be back this week, and yet he's a full participant Wednesday in practice. The other absence for the Bengals to keep tabs on could be DJ Reader along the defensive line. I think he also is in COVID protocol, so we'll see if he's available to be out there on Sunday for this Bengals stop unit. But the other matchup to watch in this campaign, I think it's as fascinating on the other side of the ball, where it's Kansas City's defense matched up against the Bengals offense, that while they check all the boxes as far as explosive skill position players are concerned, there are a lot of games where the offense fails to impress, whether it's the offensive line having issues protecting Joe Burrow, him being plagued by turnovers, but it's far from a perfect unit, and in comes a Kansas City team that can generate sneaky pressure that's underrated in the secondary. And for me, I think this side of the ball is as fascinating to watch as maybe any matchup we'll see all weekend in the National Football League.
I completely agree. And listen, I mean, the Bengals made us money last week. We cashed the total we discussed. Obviously, we didn't anticipate Josh Johnson being the starting quarterback when we betted early in the week at 43.5, but did get down to 41, and then game day steam, even with Josh Johnson out to 44 at Pinnacle. And then obviously, we were able to cash our best bet teaser as well that we posted on the site. So, like, you name it, we were quite fond of the Bengals last week. But I've said this a couple times this year, and I think it's especially important this week. As good as Joe Burrow is, and right now, absolutely on fire, right? Number two among all qualifying quarterbacks in EPA plus completion percentage above expectation on the season. You mentioned some of the weapons, right? You have like three great dudes in Higgins, Chase, and Boyd, and then you throw in a plus tight end and Uzama and a solid back and Mixon that's pretty versatile, can run between the tackles and catch passes out of the backfield. It sounds like this absolutely unstoppable force, and last week against Baltimore, it was.
For the second time this season against the Ravens.
Yes, but I wouldn't let that one data point, or the second data point against Baltimore, to your point, kind of completely fool you into thinking this is an elite Bengals offense. We know arguably the top three guys in the Ravens secondary didn't play, right? Marlon Humphrey, Deshaun Elliott, you know, Marcus Peters, none of them played. And then to make matters worse, your starting cornerback, Anthony Everett, last week left after 11 snaps with an injury. And that was also kind of the perfect matchup, we said, right? You have this spread offense by design with Joe Burrow, and when they pass, they line up in shotgun, so it does give you a little bit more time to throw, and then you go three wides with this spread. It forces Baltimore to kind of identify the blitzer pre-snap, and so it was just kind of a picture-perfect matchup, and then you got the injuries in the secondary. But if you look on the season, Bengals offense is just 19th. And efficiency, even after last week's numbers incorporated. It's a league average offense on early downs. And this comes against the very easiest schedule of defenses in the NFL, and by a long mile. Literally, the very easiest schedule of passing defenses and the very easiest schedule of run defenses the Bengals have played this season. And now you get a Kansas City defense whose weighted defensive efficiency is 9th, so top 10. They've been trending in the right direction for a long time. Really, if you look since week 6, Kansas City's 4th in EPA per play allowed, and the Chiefs have played the 3rd toughest schedule of offenses. So, like, it's just kind of this mix of one defense is trending in the right direction and playing fantastic offenses overall. You have another offense that is just perceptually, like, elite, but they're not. They're below average, and they played the easiest schedule. It's really interesting from that dynamic. All signs point to the Chiefs having their full complement of corners, right? Snead, Ward, Hughes, and Fenton all should be a go here. You have a Chiefs defense top 10 in both pressure rate and pass rush win rate going against a Bengals offensive line that's 30th in pass block win rate. They're going to be without their right tackle, right? The weakness of the Bengals offensive line is on the interior. Trey Hopkins, Hakeem Adeniji, and Quentin Spain are all horrific in pass protection. And then Chris Jones will be back this week. So everything I see tells me if you're expecting like this elite performance from Cincinnati offensively here, you're probably not getting it.
Yeah, I mean, this has been a team, like you said, I think you know when to bet on them versus when to stay away. And this game will be kind of a watershed moment. And quietly, when you look at the Bengals, A loss here against Kansas City, potentially coupled with a Browns win on Monday Night Football against the Steelers, that, given what the market suggests, sets up a massive showdown between the Browns and Bengals, arguably for the division, depending on how that Ravens-Rams game goes. So we'll see exactly what this team is worth. Joe Burrow has been outstanding for stretches, and he does it all despite having a coach that doesn't exactly give him game plans to go out there and execute each and every week.
Now, what I want to say is this, right? Like, my vibe is this game comes down a little bit, right? When I just kind of look at some of the numbers we are using for power ratings and kind of speaking to a couple guys, you know, 5.5 is a tough number to get to. And this is certainly one of the biggest games the Bengals will have in a very long time. I would expect a sold out crowd here. And this is a division.
You would think that building is electric.
Yes, this is a division that the Bengals have not won, I believe, since 2015. And so, you know, you kind of factor those things in here. If you are laying it with the Chiefs now at like 5, 5.5, you are certainly paying quite the premium. Now, does it unfold that way on Sunday? No. Are the matchups really favorable in the coaching advantage, supremely favorable to the Chiefs? Yes. But you are kind of bullying your head through a wall here that you know, this line is more like Chiefs minus like 3.4. That's what we have it at. So it is a little inflated.
We talk about it all the time, and even this late in the year, when you're looking to try and find a game to take a substantial position on, you want the matchup to line up, you want the situation to be in your favor, and you also want the core number. Obviously, there are games that we bet that all three of those things don't line up, and it only checks 1 to 2 boxes. This game, like you said, should be a fascinating battle to see if the number closes closer to 4 or if it closes closer to 6 when we get to Sunday a few minutes before kickoff. Another game early on Sunday, Payne, that should be fascinating to watch, that'll have seismic impact on the AFC playoff picture, will take place in Nashville, where it's the Tennessee Titans, a 3.5-point favorite, as they welcome in the Miami Dolphins on a short week. Total in this game at 40 at FanDuel Sportsbook, and credit to the Dolphins. They become the first team in NFL history to win 7 straight in a season after losing 7 straight earlier in the year. We know there is a massive rest advantage in favor of the Titans here, and some level of familiarity between these two head coaches. Mike Vrabel and Brian Flores had some overlap while they were both in New England. Vrabel as a player, and Flores had nothing but effusive praise to talk about Vrabel and saying that he learned more from Vrabel when Vrabel was a player than the other way around and Flores was on the coaching staff. When you look at Miami, we've said it week in, week out. This team, you question what they've been able to accomplish because they're beating up on, you know, some of the NFL lightweights. But at some point, it's tough to quantify confidence, and you have to imagine that's at a high for the Dolphins going on the road against an offense that has one playmaker in A.J. Brown, who is as dominant as ever in their win against the 49ers.
Yeah, I mean, listen, what's interesting about this game so far is we have seen some pro money lay the 3 in the Titans at the shops that are open, and that's why it's out to 3.5. And then once we've kind of gotten there, it seems like there's a little bit of a battle, right? Like, I don't know. The resounding feedback I get from the group that laid 3 is, you know, look who the Dolphins have played during this win streak. And, you know, you outlined that pretty well, and I get it. I think we addressed it last week as we broke down Monday Night Football. And it's, you know, it's Houston, it's the Jets twice, it's the Giants, Baltimore in a short week, it's Carolina, who's really downtrending as badly as anyone in the NFL, and then the Saints, obviously, were missing like 20 players and starting a 4th-string quarterback. But I am kind of a believer that two things can be true, and it's that the Dolphins have absolutely improved and are in a better headspace, as you alluded to, and they've played poor competition. I mean, Miami did lose to Jacksonville and Atlanta back-to-back weeks. So, like, getting wins for Miami is certainly, like, a positive thing, regardless of who they've played. But what's kind of kept me off the Titans to this point, and maybe it'll change, is we think most of these Titan wins recently are pretty fugazi, right? I mean, beat the 49ers, you're outgained by 1.9 yards per play, and we're a net negative 15% in success rate. And the quarterback you played against, we find out, has broken multiple bones on his throwing hand. Scoreboard obviously looks great against the Jaguars, 20-0 blowout. Off the bye, though, the Titans managed 263 total yards of offense against the Jaguars. Against New England, The Titans were outgained by more than 2 yards per play if you remove the draw play before the half that goes 68 yards for a touchdown when the Titans were just trying to run the clock out and get to halftime. You lose to the Texans at home. The Rams held you to 192 total yards of offense. Trevor Siemian comes to town, and despite getting help from the officials before half, the Saints outgain you by 1.5 yards per play. If you're a fan of the Titans, right, it's awesome. You're turning some of these games into win. Doesn't matter how you win, right? Just win. Hell, you know, gain 93 yards and turn your opponent over 8 times. Just win the game. But as bettors, right, one of the ways we can identify value is finding lies on the scoreboard by digging into the advanced box scores. And what the scoreboard is not really telling us about some of these teams and games, you will find in the advanced box score. And it's been not overly pretty for Tennessee. And if you just kind of look at the in-season Pythag, the Titans are one of the 5 most overachieving teams in the league. And so that doesn't really like spell, hey, I want to go lay it here. You know, now, Ryan Tannehill revenge game. Miami gave up on him. Certainly some narrative stuff there, but it's a huge game for Tanny personally. It's one I can tell you firsthand that he is circled on the schedule before the season even started. Now, I think one of the key matchups in this game is how he's going to handle the pressure that Brian Flores sends. Obviously, the Dolphins love to get after the quarterback. They're number one in pressure rate right now, 2nd in blitz rate. Ryan Tannehill's been pressured on 35% of his dropbacks this season. He has not dealt with pressure or the blitz very well. 10 turnover-worthy throws and a 60 passer rating when pressured. So Tannehill has to be able to handle that. It helps getting Taylor Lewan and Roger Saffold back, who were both upgraded, I believe, this morning. Miami defensively at times can be a touch soft defending the run, so maybe Devontae Foreman has a nice little game here and he's a factor. That's the way Tennessee covers this number, is that Tannehill's good against the blitz and good in, you know, under pressure, and Foreman can get the ground game going over a little bit. Now, the total was hit very early in the week. Very sharp group went under 41.5. It makes some sense based on both teams not being explosive at all. Miami's only scored 3 touchdowns outside the red zone. Titans average about 2.5 plays per game of 20 or more yards. That's the lowest rate in the league. But if you, you know, are paying attention, the weather Sunday looked substantially worse than it does today. So that's something to kind of factor in a little bit in terms of this total. My gut tells me like we could see some numbers guys potentially come back in over here. So there could be a little battle on this total, and I don't necessarily want to be involved with that. But I do think it's potentially, you know, predicated on what Miami can do offensively, which I'm not quite sure what that'll look like here.
Get the ball out of Tua's hand quickly, take advantage of the short passing game, and line up Jaylen Waddle every which way from Sunday, like they were able to utilize him against the Saints. If you're looking for the matchup to watch here, I'd have to think, Payne, that Xavien Howard travels with A.J. Brown and Miami focuses on everything else and allowing those two to cancel each other out.
I mean, it's possible. Obviously, you know, you went out and paid gobs of money to Byron Jones, so you would feel comfortable, I think, with either of those guys. I don't know if it's going to be a traveling situation, but maybe that's what this will entail. I do think, you know, just kind of looking at the other side quickly here, you mentioned the pressure. That'll obviously be key on that side of the ball. And I, you know, we kind of touched on this Monday night, and anytime you are facing the Dolphins in its current construct, I think two things probably apply, and it's, can you get pressure on Tua? And is your coverage sophisticated enough to confuse him and make a game-changing play? Because you know Tua gets the ball out quicker than any NFL quarterback, and he's an anticipation thrower. So if you can confuse him pre-snap, he'll throw you one or two. And we saw that on Monday night. At one point also, the Titans were number one in the NFL in pressure rate without blitzing. Those numbers have started to downtrend recently. So let's also keep an eye on Bud Dupree's status with the new rule change obviously implemented this week for quicker returns from the big C list. He could be a go. We've also mentioned some of the improvement that we've seen from the Titans defensively, right? I would envision Miami being, you know, really one-dimensional here And if you look since week 9, the Titans are top 5 in both EPA per rush allowed and rushing success rate allowed. The Dolphins, 30th in rushing efficiency despite facing a really below average schedule of run defenses. So it basically becomes Tua and his weapons through the air getting it out quick. I'm sure Jeffrey Simmons is going to give Dieter fits on the inside. So Miami's going to have to get creative with how they kind of help the interior pressure situation. One of the areas that we have talked about, the Titans being extremely vulnerable defensively, was in the slot. We've outlined that anytime we've discussed a Titans game. Jalen Waddle runs more than 60% of his routes from the slot. You mentioned kind of giving him the ability to move around throughout the offense. I think George Kotze, you have to give him some credit. He has done a very good job not letting defenses key on him, but that's something to look for here. Basically, I think we outlined this last week, is like the Titans' primary slot coverage guys, they've allowed over a 135 passer rating to the slot. We witnessed it again on Thursday, whether it was like Debo or Ayuk or Kittle, they crushed in the slot. So those are some of the things I think to focus on that side of the ball.
Yeah, that should be an interesting game. We keep saying that water will meet its level eventually. Miami has been a team that still, we believe, hasn't quite been battle-tested, but it is 7 straight wins in the National Football League, and far be it for us to scoff at that. Meanwhile, Tennessee has been a team, as you kind of mentioned, that professional bettors have not been bullish on, given some of their advanced metrics. And this, of course, playing without the likes of Derrick Henry or a very dynamic offense for extended stretches of the season. Another game taking place early in the day on Sunday, Payne. The Los Angeles Rams will travel east to take on the Baltimore Ravens, and it's the Rams, a 3.5-point favorite at FanDuel Sportsbook. This total sits at 46.5. The Rams win over the Vikings, clinched a playoff spot. This will mark the second straight game where they'll travel more than 2 time zones, last week in Minneapolis, this week 3 time zones on the East Coast. But the Rams have fared exceptionally well, 8-2 in the 1 p.m. Eastern window playing on the East Coast going back to 2007. And Sean McVay has kind of said, hey, look, our players embrace this. We have a good game plan. They like getting out there early. But for all the talk about the Rams and how dynamic this offense has been, Matthew Stafford struggled mightily against the Vikings. He hasn't been great in recent weeks. It's been the Rams' defense that's a story not getting enough credit.
Yeah, I mean, you're pretty spot on. And listen, I don't want to shortchange this game because it's important, obviously, right? The Rams are fighting for the number one seed in a bye in the NFC, and the Ravens are fighting for first place in the AFC North. But at this point, we don't have a lineup at Pinnacle and a few other key spots, and you have question marks at quarterback for the Ravens. And, you know, everyone's getting excited about Lamar returning to practice Wednesday, and we heard Harbaugh come out on Monday and say the only way Lamar plays is if he records 2 back-to-back practices. I saw videos from Lamar's practice yesterday. I mean, he can't even walk in a straight line without a limp. So I'm not sure how you can put him out there on Sunday in that form. Tyler Huntley, we know, hit the big C list very late last week. He does have a chance to play under the new revised rules if he's not showing any symptoms, but, you know, he hasn't returned to practice yet this week. So no live reps for Huntley to this point in preparation for the Rams. Now, you did mention the defense, right? And specific to this matchup, I think there's a couple things to maybe focus on. It appears Raheem Morris has kind of managed to merge some of his principles into the Brandon Staley defense, and you have key guys that are playing substantially better, right? Williams has improved his play opposite Ramsey at the other corner spot quietly. The Rams defense has just been on fire, right? Like, no one's really talking about it, but they're getting offenses behind the down and distance, and then they're getting after them, right? Rams right now allowing a league low 4.7 yards per play on first down. 3rd in overall defensive efficiency on first down. And then when they get you in these known passing situations, they just unleash Donald, Miller, and Gaines, and Floyd, who can all eat. And so the Rams are number 1 in pass rush win rate. So Baltimore's got to be efficient on early downs here, because if they're not, you get a Rams pass rush, and the Ravens dead last in the NFL in 3rd and 4th down efficiency. Now put a mobile quarterback under center that's not mobile and see how that works on 3rd and 5 plus. I'm not sure that's the path here if you are Harbaugh, but maybe they're desperate and maybe they're saying to themselves, like, you know, a 70% Lamar is better than Josh Johnson if Tyler Huntley can't go, and they would have more indication of how sick Huntley is, right? The other side of the ball, just kind of quickly hitting that, is Baltimore's inability, obviously, to defend the pass, right? Their situation in the secondary is only getting worse. Baltimore's 30th in defensive pass efficiency right now. And if you look at this past four-game losing streak, Baltimore's dead last in the NFL in EPA per play allowed. Every time Baltimore's opponent has snapped the ball on offense the last 4 weeks, they're averaging plus 0.25 expected points. It's the worst rate in the league, and by 75% over this stretch. And you look at some of the quarterbacks in that sample, it's Big Ben. It's Baker Mayfield. Now, I think the only way the Ravens can maybe survive defensively is getting pressure on Stafford. Clearly, Stafford is not playing well right now. Had three picks again last week. A lot of head-scratching stuff. But the key here is natural pressure. Because even though Stafford continues to kind of like downtrend, he's got a 126 passer rating when blitzed. 80% adjusted accuracy. 11-1 touchdown interception ratio. We have seen smart veteran quarterbacks be able to beat the blitz before it comes pre-snap. And we know Wink is going to send blitz. So you're kind of unsure if you're actually going to be able to get to Stafford, or if you do, if the blitzes are going to actually work. In terms of the line, here is what I have seen. Bettors got out, laid the Rams -3. The thought process was pretty simple, right? And it's if Lamar gets upgraded, he's not going to be 100%. And the line probably sits still 3. And you have a coin flip bet in your hand. But there's upside and somewhat of a free roll element that if Lamar doesn't go, now you have a great bet that's beating the market by a ton, and there are other options available, right? Maybe you set up a middle. Similar situation with the total. Guys went over 45. If it's Lamar, market likely overreacts, similar to what it did last week when we told you, hey, if Lamar gets potentially upgraded or downgraded, the market may do something stupid. And as we recorded that podcast, right, it was like 44, Lamar gets officially downgraded, it goes to 41, then Huntley gets announced out as well. My thought process is the market likely overreacts to Lamar getting upgraded, and it will get you above the key of 47, and then again, you have some options there going over 40 and potentially coming in like, you know, under 47.5 or under 48. It's just, this really hasn't, there hasn't been a true position taken on this game. It's more just kind of number grabbing and trying to set yourself up in prime position for what ultimately unfolds price-wise.
Before we talk to John, I do have to ask you one final question on this game, and you mentioned Lamar Jackson in the video footage we saw. Neither one of us consider ourselves a landscape architect or masters in terms of preparing grass, but what the hell were they playing on? Was that straw? I mean, do we have issues with, do we need herbicide out there? What's going on in this Ravens practice facility when we watch that video?
My feeling is we're going to find out from someone far smarter than us that has or is in the field of grass. It's probably some uber sophisticated system that is able to survive the winter elements. Or it's just grass that's died. I'm not quite sure, but it looks as if it is something similar to what Boise tried to do with their field. Right now, obviously, Boise's got the Smurf turf. This is something different, but it's as exaggerated a color as the Smurf turf. It's pretty wild looking.
And we're all here to have our listeners make us smarter. So if there's something behind it, there's science, or they know about the Ravens practice facility, hey, by all means, chime in our mentions. But I do know a thing or two on the West Coast. You have to make a choice, Payne. When you live in the desert, do you want winter grass or do you want summer grass? Because the grass can't stay so green year-round. So a lot of people have a very tough decision to make if you live in a Phoenix or a Las Vegas or somewhere else along those lines. Not quite sure.
Just go no grass. Right?
Well, yeah, you can go
the rock thing, and then you just get a little putting green in the back.
You go turf, you go a little desert landscape, a lot lower maintenance than having the grass guy come out and cut that. There is no doubt about that. But clearly, these are the things we think about when we listen and read a coach's press conferences. You watch some of the practice footage that's out there. And for those folks who I'm sure will track down exactly the limp that Lamar was showing, it'll make a lot more sense when they get a visual for it. But without further ado, it's time to get a fresh perspective and introduce John into the mix. He joins us every Thursday here on the Bet the Board podcast, and of course, the final installment for calendar year 2021. You can follow John Sheeran on Twitter at Jay Sheeran. That's J-S-H-E-E-R-A-N 1981. And John, the NFL regular season inches ever so close to the finish line. Hopefully you had a good holiday weekend, and it was a profitable one for the guys behind the counter.
Yeah, we had a great weekend. So, yeah, it was... enjoyable. It was good to get the different schedule, I think, over the last couple of weeks. And I think, you know, there's more football on, more days to be covered, but there's more eyes on it. And that's always a good thing for us. So, yeah, good holiday period as well. And looking forward to the postseason.
John, what's the go-to holiday drink for you, by the way?
That's a really good question. I mean, I don't know.
I'm big here fan. Delivering the hard-hitting questions.
That's that one definitely caught me off guard. I'm a bit of a fan of a Moscow Mule these days, so I'll go with that one.
Okay, beautiful.
Or Moscow, you know, hey, not beer, if you're in America.
Not everyone paying can drink your Tito's and soda with 7 ice cubes or whatever it is that you've taken to for calendar year 2021.
Not doing a lot of drinking. Not doing much drinking.
That's. I think a lot of people would find that shocking that you have to work with me 3 days a week, that you hadn't hit the bottle significantly harder. And the toll it's taken on you over all these years. John, I mean, Payne and I belabored the point early on in the show. We know a number of books didn't have prices posted on a variety of the marquee games this weekend. And I feel like we've asked you this question throughout the season, and it's a broken record, but we know we get new listeners each and every week on the podcast. How much more challenging has it been for you guys to pay attention to the ongoing increases in players going on the COVID list, off the COVID list, as it pertains to, let's say, a game like the Colts, where Darius Leonard and company go on game night, versus this week when you get a player like Carson Wentz that we're not quite sure of his status, and how you go about booking that game throughout the course of the week's life cycle?
Yeah, look, I've got two kind of thoughts on it, Todd. The first one is it's no more difficult for us than it is for the bettors out there, so I'm not looking for any sympathy, and wouldn't expect to get any. So I think that's the first thing. It's the same for both sides of the counter, which is, I guess, why we fundamentally believe that we should always hang a line when some others don't. I don't think that that's the right approach. I think lowering your limits and not being as open to exposure is a sensible solution to it. But the vast majority of the bettors out there have got no inside information, are getting it the same time we're getting it, and then it's a bit of a race, so it's more difficult. It definitely takes more eyes and attention on it, but we all know what it is right now. We've had 2 years of it, and, you know, like I said, we just kind of treat it the way that it is, treat it at face value, and move on with it. It just is a part of life these days, not just for hanging lines and sports betting, but for the world we live in these days. And I think you just got to have a common sense approach to it, and try and hang a line. People are interested in these numbers. The impact of whether Carson Wentz will play or not is something that people will look at, even if they don't necessarily bet on it. So I think the onus is on the bookmaker and the odds maker to hang the line, and with all of the information that they have available, and manage it from there. And sure, it's a big difference between Carson Wentz and Sam Ellinger, and we think somewhere between 7 and 2.5. We sit at 6.5 right now in that game, and think that with the new protocol, he's more likely and heavily likely to play now, whereas when the news broke, we thought that was him done. But obviously the day later, they've changed the guidelines. So it just is what it is, and we take a common sense approach to it, I think.
You know, Payne, it's a lot like we talked about. It's the guy sitting in front of his or her odd screen, you know, waiting for some of this injury information to break, knowing there's about a 30 to 45 second window to get to the best of the number, lock in a price, and it eliminates some of the X's and O's and deep diving into some of the statistical analysis that you normally would rely on for finding winners in the National Football League.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Although I think with the new rule change this week, it becomes a little bit different, although the books that are willing to keep a lineup the entire time and just adjust will open you up potentially to some middle opportunities. I know specific to the Colts game, there was a book that reopened 2.5, went down to 1.5. And that's where there was some buy on the news that the rule change was being implemented and Carson Wentz could actually play. So that becomes the interesting dilemma of this whole thing. But John, in terms of NFL Week 17, just from what I have seen, it's been a particularly quiet week. Are you seeing the same thing on your end?
Yeah, 100%. We didn't notice a whole lot of difference and variance in the numbers that we consensus jumped on yesterday or landed on. And, you know, we've seen that across the piece, seen a real lack of pro money this week, probably the quietest week so far this season. I guess some of it is the COVID impact, and then some of it is TBD, I guess, maybe people holding their powder until closer to game day when they have more confidence about who will be on the field.
Makes complete sense. I guess kind of digging into some of these games, knowing that I know you guys come up with a house number and there are some intriguing games, specifically Cardinals Cowboys. We've seen a pretty large adjustment week to week with Dallas -2.5 on the look ahead, now out to some places as high as 6. Where did you guys kind of align on that game?
Yeah, we think that's too far, too big of an adjustment. We're more like 3.5 on the game was where our numbers sat. We're obviously respecting the adjustment. The Cardinals definitely look pretty poor for the last couple of weeks, and Dallas are, you know, firing in all cylinders again. So I can understand why people are willing to pay a few extra cent for Dallas. Just nowhere near where we could get a line move to. So we'll be the best number in market on the Cardinals. We're hanging a 5 now. I think most shops are at 5.5. So for us, this is a game that we take an opinion on, and probably would expect to see maybe some sharp play on Arizona closer to kickoff.
Makes complete sense. Another one that's interesting is Rams and Ravens. Ravens obviously fighting for AFC North supremacy, the Rams for a #1 seed in the NFC. How are you guys kind of handling that situation, seeing Lamar back at practice, clearly not 100%? You guys are at 3.5 now. If Lamar is in, where would you tick that line to? And potentially, if it's Josh Johnson again, how high would you go on that number?
Yeah, I think it's probably sitting somewhere in the middle. Yep. We obviously have a huge delta between these two guys, probably somewhere in the region of, you know, just north of a touchdown. So if we're sitting halfway in the middle, that kind of gives you an idea of where we get to. Probably, you know, I would expect to see 7-point swings from the core number, and then we're halfway there, so probably around a pick'em game if he was in. I don't think he'll play. I think they'll need another week for him. I saw some comments last night saying similar as well. So we do have a slight lean to the Rams, with expecting that Lamar will sit again. But like I said, pretty big adjustment should he be ruled in.
I think the biggest question at this point, if it's Huntley potentially gets upgraded or if it's Josh Johnson again. Yep. Anything else that kind of sticks out to you on the board in terms of FanDuel's in-house number being off from the market?
I think the Saints is another one that we're a little bit lower on. We were 5.5. It's a full touchdown. So I thought that one was interesting. A weak market, though. Then we're obviously monitoring COVID in the Raiders-Colts game. Wentz obviously playing a key part about that. We spoke on that one. I mentioned Dallas being one that we were a little bit out on, and the Rams. I think the other one is probably the Vikings. We're probably leaning to them and the under in that game. I think the weather's forecast to be somewhere around about 0. So I think that will probably impact passing game a little bit. Obviously, probably advantages Green Bay, given they're so used to it at this time of the season. But the Vikings and the under, probably the main one I would call out for us this week.
It's one of those times a year where you try and figure out which teams are still playing for something, where others are just looking to try and grind it out, stay healthy, and head to the golf course as the end of the regular season looms closer. John, may have to give you a homework assignment going into week 18, so I'm going to put you on the spot here. We won't ask you the questions this week, but as far as, you know, futures liability, you know, some of the awards that we've talked about, kind of curious to get your take and where you guys stand, knowing how volatile and how popular those markets are. I think all of us kind of share the same mindset that this may be as wide open a playoff picture, even before we know the field of 14 that we've seen in recent years, that it's not just a crash course for Kansas City and the AFC and maybe a Tampa or Green Bay in the NFC to play for the Lombardi Trophy in Los Angeles.
Yeah, that's a good call, Ed. It's something we didn't really speak a whole lot about all season. I can tell you from now, the Bills, the Packers, and the Rams are the three that we're against. They're the ones that we have the biggest exposure. The Bills almost twice as big as anybody else. Green Bay and Los Angeles still heading towards 2 million in exposure. Not as high a number as I might have expected, but I think that's really kind of alludes to the idea that you just mentioned, that this is pretty wide open, and we've seen, you know, a big spread of money across multiple teams. The Chiefs are about a break-even team for us right now. They'll obviously be a loser should they progress to a Super Bowl, just given the money they would take on that route as they shorten as a favorite. Happy to do some digging out. We can even pull out some sharp bets that we've seen from some of our sharper customers in the last couple of weeks to give people out there a feel for, you know, where that sharp money is being aimed at in a futures market too.
Beauty. I think our listeners, I mean, they're always, as we know, we discourage them a lot of times in higher hold markets, but sometimes they like to have a little fun putting up a few bucks to make a lot. And over the years, we've unpacked the, hey, look, a money line rollover for some of these teams, especially coming on the road for three playoff games, will pay dividends there. But they're always curious to know where the professionals are plunking down their cash. John, can't thank you enough for all your contributions throughout the course of the calendar year. From Payne, myself, and all of our loyal listeners, want to wish you and your family a very happy and healthy new year. Enjoy some of the great bowl games this week and the NFL as well. And we'll look forward to talking to you on the flip side when we record our first NFL podcast, at least Thursday edition in calendar year 2022. Always fun getting to shoot the shit with John, and you talked about it, Payne. I mean, we only snap off a small excerpt from our discussion, probably went on for about an hour. Some things should be widely available for general consumption. Other things we obviously have to keep a little tighter to the vest given the slightly sensitive landscape that we're all a part of these days. But interesting that he hasn't seen a whole lot of action in any real capacity as far as this week is concerned.
It's not all that shocking. Just based upon when we ran our model for totals, there wasn't much that spit out with a ton of value. And then in terms of what I've seen come in from some of the groups sidewise, been very quiet that way as well. So does not surprise me. I think we're all kind of trying to figure out the best way to navigate these waters. And, you know, sometimes when you have a little bit more of a clearer picture and the limits are a little bit higher later in the week, that's when things will come full circle. But to this point, not a ton of movement, right? Seeing a little grabs here on the Giants at 6.5. You know, we've seen some money obviously come in on the Cowboys early in the week, but who knows if that'll end up being the official side later in the week. Yeah, I think you can make the right guesstimate that Washington has taken some professional money. There's no doubt about that. But other than that, like, there hasn't been these massive positions taken to this point from the guys that matter most.
It's always fascinating when you watch what happens, like you said, early in the week or even on Thursdays as limits start to expand, especially what can take place around key numbers, knowing if guys are looking to jockey and try and get some of those things working in their favor. They get the ball rolling, the public latches on, and we know there'll be a lot of recreational bettors in action over the holiday weekend. So you could take on a very similar tenor to what we saw unfold Thanksgiving weekend year in, year out. One final game to go, and it's the Sunday Night Football affair at frozen Lambeau Field between the Vikings and Packers. It's Green Bay, a full touchdown favorite at FanDuel Sportsbook. Total on the game sits at 46.5. The Vikings lost to the Rams 27-20, but in doing so, they played their 12th consecutive one-score game with that late field goal to make it a one-possession contest. It's tied for the longest single-season streak of its kind in NFL history, that with the 1989 Chargers and the 2015 Ravens, who also played 12 straight one-possession games. Meanwhile, the Packers, they've been relatively fortunate. They've won back-to-back games by a grand total of 3 points. 5 wins by 3 points or less this season has them tied with the Titans, so they lived on the razor's edge, and they've been extremely successful in those tightly contested games. Meanwhile, when you look at the Packers, 7-0 straight up, 6-1 against the number at Lambeau Field this season. The Packers, 21-2 straight up under Matt LaFleur when they play at Lambeau, 16-7 against the spread. In come the Vikings, season hanging in the balance, and it seems like we say that every week with Kirk Cousins and company. Do they have enough on the offensive side to put a little pressure on Aaron Rodgers and this high-powered Green Bay offense?
I think that's the big question, right? And, you know, there's no secret as to how you want to attack Green Bay's defense. And we outlined that last week when we broke down the Saturday game between Green Bay and Cleveland, and it really came to fruition, right? I mean, the Browns were dominant running the football. Packers gave up 8.8 yards a carry. The Browns had a 72% rushing success rate. I feel like we talked about this off air. If they had just ran the ball late, they're probably lining up for a game-winning field goal, despite at that point Baker Mayfield throwing 3 pretty costly interceptions. He ultimately ended up with 4 because they chose to throw late. This needs to be a Delvin Cook game, especially when you look at some of the weather that's potentially at play here with below freezing wind chill. I think that's the element here, is that you have to figure out how to get Delvin Cook and Madison going on the ground, and that's going to provide some, I think, advantages for Kirk Cousins in the play action pass game. The way the Packers secondary is kind of designed. It's they're going to be willing to allow some of the underneath stuff. So I think there is some potential ability there for Jefferson to make some noise off play action. I do think some of the Jaire Alexander returning for this game is a little bit overblown. My understanding is he needed to be activated to be eligible for the playoffs. So let's see what practice looks like today on Thursday. I know he got a light practice out there, but I didn't really see an indication that he would be playing. Did you?
No, I mean, from reading, and if you kind of take what the coaches are saying at face value, this seemed more a roster type move than expectation that they would throw Jaire out there in these kind of conditions until he's fully 100%.
Yep, exactly. And then just kind of quickly looking at the other side, you know, where Green Bay is starting to struggle a little bit is the injuries are just mounting up front, right? We know you lost Corey Linsley, your starting center, all-world center in free agency. Bakhtiari, still out. Elkington Jenkins, out for the year. Billy Turner missed last week with a knee. He was been a DNP to this point of the week. So you do have some questions with the Packers offensive line, down like four guys from last season's team, and we still know that Aaron Rodgers is dealing with the toe injury. Again, you're watching him in these colder games at home, and I know the production is there, but he's just out there limping around. Now, maybe it's theatrics, I don't know, but certainly, you know, he's missing these practices. The offensive line is kind of a shell of itself right now. Let's see if the Vikings can take advantage of that. Obviously, they're down both their edge rushers. Minnesota's 27th in pass rush win rate, so they don't really get after you naturally, but we know Zimmer's kind of the king of the double A-gap blitz, and so he's able to manufacture some pressure via the blitz straight up the middle most times. If you can't get pressure, right, and you play soft coverage zone like the Vikings tend to do, there is an element of some pitch and catch, and that's what we saw in the first meeting for Green Bay, even though they lost. But Rodgers, 10.6 in attempts, 63% success, 5 explosive passes with 4 touchdowns in that game. Maybe the elements are actually going to help the Minnesota Vikings in this game. I think ultimately what this comes down to is, you know, the Packers have not looked great. They're doing things, right? They're 12-3, right? We kind of have this conversation every single season about Green Bay overachieving a little bit based on some of their metrics. And you do have to give LaFleur credit, and you do have to give Aaron Rodgers credit. Fantastic quarterback. They're able to win close games because you have a very sophisticated head coach and one of the all-time best quarterbacks. And that's allowing you to kind of escape your deficiencies, because we know they can't stop the run. We know the offensive line is just beaten and battered. When you look right now at the in-season Pythag, the Packers come out to 8.9 wins. They have 12. It's the most overachieving team in the NFL through 16 weeks. And so it's ugly, and we can kind of wrap this up now if we want to, Todd. I think we kind of go down with the ship. We're going to be like, what's his name? Captain Edward Smith. Is that the name of the Titanic captain?
You're putting my history knowledge to good use here. I was going to start talking about George Costanza and his relationship with the Andrea Doria, like an old man easing into a nice warm bath.
Yes. So, I mean, we got pretty fortunate, right? We've kind of bitched about COVID a little bit, and it does make things frustrating, especially when you take time handicapping games and then going over them publicly, and like the game just gets nuked from the board. And, you know, we were bitching about it on the College Football Playoff podcast, which we released on Tuesday, and we're kind of bitching about, you know, some of the things there. And, you know, we didn't tell our listeners is like we had NC State, and then just a couple hours after recording, like that game obviously comes off the board. However, last week, Delvin Cook going down as we were about to give out the Vikings as a best bet saved us and our listeners some coin in that moment. And we were able to navigate the waters and, you know, put out the best bet on the website, which won. So we had it, you know, it helped us a little bit last week. But I think let's go back to the well and actually make it official this week. Let's go with the Vikings plus the 7, which is now widely available out there. This is the Vikings season. They do have an ability to run on the Packers and keep this close. And with the Packers offensive line, you know, there is an ability for Zimmer's blitz to get home a little bit, but basically this is a numbers play. And again, I think, you know, sometimes the Packers' record and their ability to win close games kind of distorts what professional bettors view them power rating wise. And, you know, if you can take seven in a game that you made, hate to even say this out loud, like 4.8, you know, you have to do that. And I think that just kind of makes sense, right? Let's go down with the ship here if with the Minnesota Vikings.
Hey, you stick with the date you brought to the dance. And, you know, in typical Viking fashion, Payne, we kind of joked about it before, that watch Minnesota put together its most complete effort of the season here, go on the road to Lambeau, sweep the season series from the Packers, then come home as right around a touchdown favorite or thereabouts and lose outright to the Chicago Bears with a potential playoff berth hanging in the balance.
That would be so Minnesota Viking.
One of the more tortured fan bases in the league, who I'm sure will be excited to having a new head coach walk the sidelines in 2022 that's capable of utilizing some of the high-powered weapons that they have on the outside. I'm not quite sure it's a ringing endorsement for Mike Zimmer or the offensive coordinator and Clint Kubiak when Justin Jefferson comes out in the wake of the loss against the Rams saying, we need to be more aggressive in our red zone plays. We have to try and score touchdowns early. So we'll see exactly what you get from Minnesota in this spot. But no doubt a healthy Dalvin Cook in the fold should be a weapon they can utilize against a Green Bay run defense that had no answers last week for the Cleveland Browns and was relatively fortunate to emerge with a victory thanks to Baker Mayfield's generosity with four interceptions in that game. You can follow Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there. Most importantly, follow the podcast at Bet the Board Pod. Five games broken down as eloquently as we can possibly do. Payne, do you have any advice for some of the New Year's Eve rookies out there and do's and don'ts in the Payne Insider playbook?
Yeah. I mean, just get a car service, whether it's Uber, whether it's something fancy. Don't drink and drive. That's basically it. Also, I'm now kind of going back through my notes here. We didn't discuss Cowboys versus Cardinals in terms of the Cowboys offense versus the Cardinals defense, but I'll let you slide there.
Well, we figured, I mean, you said you wanted to go quick. You wanted to highlight some of the matchups that were worth watching. What should we tell people? That the Cowboys offense, if they pick up where they left off against the Washington football team, should be able to shred an Arizona defense that's now finally starting to regress because they don't have elite playmakers?
There you go.
I mean, I'm more than happy to. I mean, we got time. We make the rules around here. I want to know if you had a nugget that you wanted to add. The last thing I want you to do, the same way I'd feel myself when we put our blood, sweat, and tears into it, to have that nugget and you go, you know what? I should have put it out there for all the listeners to be able to take to the window.
No, we can get out of Dodge. We can get out of Dodge. I know our producer's texting us. We're a little late. And so, that's fine.
All right. I just wanted to check.
I didn't really notice it in the moment.
I know it's the Festivus for the rest of us, so I just wasn't sure if this was the airing of grievances and you wanted to get it off your chest before we close the book on another successful season of the Bet the Board podcast.
No, I was kind of, after we discussed the first part of the ball, I was kind of looking up at the score and seeing 15-0 South Carolina in shock, and I just kind of went to the next game.
Yeah, that's a shocker. If there was one team in bowl season that even had an NFL-caliber quarterback that you figured could put a no-show together, kudos to North Carolina for that lack of effort that they showed in the first half of this game, but should be an entertaining watch going forward. We can discuss Mac Brown. We can discuss Sam Howell. There'll be plenty of time for all of that. It's not going
to
happen today.
Plenty of time for
them
to catch up, though, here.
There's no doubt about it. Probably not a bad live bet for those folks so inclined to do so. We'll see if those comments hold weight or people can ridicule us if North Carolina loses the game 45-7 by the time this thing goes live. For Payne Insider, I'm Todd Furman, and everyone in the Bet the Board family want to wish you and yours a very happy and healthy new year. Be smart. Be responsible. Enjoy some of the big bowl games on the horizon. Best of luck with all of your NFL investments for week 17. We'll be back with you on Monday morning to preview Brown Steelers. But in the meantime, with a Minnesota Vikings ticket in hand come Sunday evening, we'll see you at the window.
Thanks for listening to Bet the Board. You can catch Todd and Payne every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday during football season, breaking down the biggest NFL and college football games. And to make sure you don't miss any free best bets, subscribe to Bet the Board on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.